Harihi Om Sahana Vavatu Sahana Bhunaktu Sahaviryam Karavavahai Tejasvinavahitamastu Ma Vidvishavahai Om Shanti 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 Om Jaya Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shri Vasari Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Page 79. Brahma, Shiva, and Lakshmi, mentioned in the previous verse, are Atma Bhuta, related with the Lord. Brahma and Shiva are his avatars, and Lakshmi is his Swarup Shakti. Yet even these three cannot easily attain Krishna, the son of a gopi. However, those who are devotional, bhakti matam, to Jashoda, indicated by Iha, and the other inhabitants in Shakya Vatsalya and Madhurya Rasa, attain Vraja Krishna easily. The Swarupa Bhakti has been defined in the Srimad Bhagavatam. Shriya, Uragendra Bhoga Bhuja Danda, Srimad Bhagavatam 10.27.83. How can we, the Shrutis, get bodies like the gopis, who relish Krishna's lotus feet on their chest and are embraced by his snake-like arms? One can only attain that by worshipping in the footsteps of the gopis. The Shrutis and Munis attain Krishna and Braja by serving in the footsteps of the gopis. But Brahma, Shiva, and Lakshmi did not. Acceptance of a low position in relation to the inhabitants of Braja was impossible because of their identity with their positions on their own planets. Others do not attain obedience to the inhabitants of Braja because of lack of such instructions or lack of taste. So then the idea is that how one identifies oneself within Krishna consciousness, then that's going to also define where one is situated within the realm, the spiritual realms. So one identifies with one's position, you know, in Aishvarya, these other things like that, then it's not going to do well to attain Vraja. Because the point is that the residents of Vraja, they're the ones who have that devotion to Krishna. We want to follow that. We make that endeavor, then we follow in their footsteps, then that is the direction that one goes. But if one has something else, then that makes for a different destination. Or it just makes it really slow. You're still convinced that Braj is the place, but if we keep these other identities that don't put us in the acceptance of a lower position, that we're servant of the servant of the servant like this, then we still won't progress very nicely. Yes.
Maharaj, can we say that in order to go to Vaikuntha, we need also to follow in the footsteps of the inhabitants of Vaikuntha?
To go to Vaikuntha, do we have to follow in the footsteps of the inhabitants? Yes, basically. Mm-hmm. But the default is if you think of the Lord at the time of death, then you just go there.
Yes.
Right? But if you think of Krishna and the residents of Vrindavan, then you go to that place. So you go wherever you think. You know, and if you think of your grandmother, then you end up as, you know, like that, in that nice little cottage in southern France, and like that. Sorry? Okay. Hey, if you want. You want to take it there? Yeah, why not?
This is the same principle now.
It's the same principle, but generally you see is that mood, that's a standard kind of mood. Most people can relate to that. So this aspect where it's dealing with Krishna is beyond the majesty, that's harder to appreciate. We may appreciate it from the sound that stories are sweet and that. So even in Vaikuntha, they like the stories. That's not a problem. They like the stories. They listen to the stories. They appreciate the stories. So they find them attractive, and they may be interested in Krishna, who is, who's performing those pastimes. But the problem is since they're devotees of Vaikunthapati, it will be then an aspect of Krishna, who's in majesty. You know, so it won't be exactly the same. It'll have some, you know, aspects of it, but it won't have the same, that sweetness. So it's sweet, but it won't be as sweet as it actually is in Braj. They're saying it's more sweet than what they're dealing with. So one has to be careful in all these things. Yes.
You see, Maharaj, from Srimad Bhagavatam, that some devotees, they pray for attaining Golok, and they don't get it. Say, like, for example, Shiva and Lakshmi, they couldn't enter the Golok Lila.
But that's because Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur says they won't give up their present identity.
Right.
As the lord of, you know, Shiva Loka, as the consort of Vishnu. So in that mood, you can't enter Krishna's pastimes, because there, if you want to enter there, if like Lakshmi wants to be a gopi, she has to be following the gopis of Braja. But she's still maintaining that she's basically the queen of Vaikuntha. So you can't have them both. So that's the difficulty. You know, if that was given up, then she could attain. But the point is that she is Vaikunthapati's consort, so there's no need, because in the form of Radharani, she's with Krishna in Braj. But the point is the pastimes of Krishna are so attractive, even Lakshmi finds them attractive, Vaikunthapati finds them attractive, Brahma finds them attractive, but they're so busy doing their own duties and identifying with them that they themselves can't get to that position. Does that make sense?
Yeah, but there is a second part to the question.
Aha.
Sorry. So it seems like some devotees get an upgrade to Golok and some not, because, you know, Shruti Chari Gopis, they were the personified Vedas. They prayed for the position and they got it. But
right.
Some devotees, they pray and they don't get it.
But we have to see is who are those devotees, other than these ones mentioned. They're not getting because they're maintaining their position. The other ones are seeing themselves as the followers of the gopis. So therefore the Shrutacharis and the sages from Dandakaranya,
right.
Like that, then they attain that because they take up that identity.
So they completely change their identity. They left that identity and became.
Yes.
So
means like the Shrutacharis, they'll be jivas.
Right.
Who they know the Veda so well, a particular Veda, that they are the personification of that Veda. Like even here sometimes you say someone is a walking encyclopedia, or you know, you have sometimes scholars every, you know, 1 or 2 per century or something that get that kind of, you know, recognition. You know, so Brahma has a whole bunch of that, you know, so it's that they're jivas, and so then they're performing their, it doesn't mean they don't perform their duties as personified Vedas. Because that's what they're supposed to do. That's why they're there in Brahma Loka. But it doesn't mean that they don't take up within their consciousness, within their heart, that of serving the gopis in Braj. Therefore, they can come to that position. Right? But we see, though, the Shrutacharis, I'm not sure, or the ones at Dandakaranya, then we'll see is that they get a bit distracted by, so they're the ones that don't get to go on the first night like that, because they get too much into the formal aspects, so the sages and their austerities or the personified Vedas and their knowledge. So even though they want that position, they haven't fully come to that platform. But then by that arrangement, by that pastime, then, you know, in the Krishna book, the introduction to the Rasa dance, within that they come up to the standard and then they'll be able to take part. But Brahma, Shiva, Lakshmi, Vishnu, they don't change their mentality. They don't change their activities. You know. So it's one thing, externally it stays the same, but internally, but they're keeping both. So that identity remains, though they would like to. But the point is they're just expansions of expansions, so the original is there. You like Sridham. He, you know, in one of his expansions was Garuda. You know, Sudham is Hanuman. So like that, when they come down to Vaikuntha, then all those associates, they're all the ones that are there. So in that mood, to serve the Lord in that mood, because there are jivas there that are worshipping Him in that mood, therefore then, it stays that way. They can't actually change. But the point being that they're not changing their mood, they don't get there, so we should take that as we have to take that humble position, otherwise we also won't get there. So until we take up that mood of service, that humility, acceptance of a low position in relation to the habits of Braja was impossible because of their identity with their positions on their own planet. That's why we've been speaking the last some days about too strong of being so identifying with that one's professional, and I do everything very pukka, and all these others, they don't do something so good, and this and that. That right there will get in the way. Because you think you're so qualified. So the residents of Vrindavan, yeah, you're qualified, you know. It's like, you know, sometimes when people go for a job, and they, you know, they want to do some simple job, and they put down their thing that they're an MA in something, oh, you're overqualified. So then the Braj Basi says, oh, sorry, you're overqualified, you know, you should go to Vaikuntha, now there you'll be a big guy, you know. Or stay in the material world, then you're even a bigger guy, you know. So that's why these things are given, you know. Because in here it's not a fault of Brahma, Shiva and Lakshmi, because that's their position. But for the devotees, then they have to understand is unless you identify as the servant of the servant following the footsteps of the residents of Braj, then one isn't going to get there. That's what's so unique. That's what's special. Because what Prabhupada gave was just about Radha and Krishna. He didn't get into all these other things. We go out and dig around and come up with some Sri Vaishnav stuff and Madhva stuff and Nimbarka stuff and this stuff and that stuff and think, wow, this is far out. And we're the ones that end up, you know, going other places. But what Prabhupada gave, he just gave, you know, the Vrindavan stuff, and in a very pleasant, nice way. And so if we take that, then that can be gotten. But we like to make it complicated. You know, simple just doesn't work. That's for village people, right? You know, like that. Like the Braj Basis, you know. And we're sophisticated urban people, you know. So then, you know, we have to make a mess. You know, it's just... part of the Dharma, right? You know, so these things are pointed out to see that one stays on that. Otherwise, because who are these people preaching to? You know, big people. You know, Rupa Goswami, Jiva Goswami, like that, Narottam Das Thakur, Srivas Thakur, and kings and ministers and, you know, big people. You know, and so then. And they maintain their mood, their position. Well, sometimes we move in these big circles and then get distracted. So that's the thing, is one has to keep that proper attitude. Because it's the same thing. Their identity with their positions on their own planets. So Lord Shiva is an expansion of Krishna. Lakshmi is his Swarup Shakti. Of Vishnu, so therefore there's not a problem that they stay in their same transcendental position. But for us, if we do that, then we'll end up staying here, and not guaranteed you'll end up staying as the CEO. You'll end up staying here, but you know what that will mean, that's another thing. Is that where? So it's just a matter of taking that mood of, as Lord Chaitanya says, that humility, you know, tolerance, respecting others, not looking for the respect, That then allows one to always be able to chant. So then one will be successful. Is that?
Can we say that an acharya like Srila Prabhupada is connected with Radha Krishna? So if we follow him, we go to Radha Krishna.
Yes.
And if we
follow, then you have to follow him. You can't end up down the road if you
accident. It depends of the acharya. We depend on the.
Yeah, it's who you're following.
Yes.
But Lord Chaitanya, you can get into anywhere from his movement. You want to go to Vaikuntha or Ayodhya, you can much more easily.
Yes. Yes.
But the point is what's being offered is Braj.
Yes.
So we take that, then it works very nicely. Yeah, that's why you follow your acharya. You follow the previous acharyas through your acharyas. And this idea we just move around, somebody dies and head off with someone else, and when they die, they head off with this one. And like that. Then Vishwanath makes the point the Brajbasis don't take such people very seriously because they're not steady. You know, it's all about themselves and what they can get rather than that. So that's the whole point.
The
Sarupa
of the Jiva generally does not change, it's fixed.
The Sarupa of the Jiva. Well, the Sarupa meaning that the Sarupa is. The jiva is the eternal servant of Krishna. That always changes. That never changes. I mean, it changes when we come to the material world, and I'm the Lord and Master of all I survey. But its natural, original sarup, that's the actual sarup. That won't change.
So by following this path, there is a possibility that someone can go to.
Means the whole idea is that what's being offered by Lord Chaitanya is service to their residents of Vrindavan. So one can go there. I mean, you're worried about the southern connection then connects you to Vaikuntha or something. Because <yeah. laughs> you see Baladeva Vidyabhushan, he's the Madhwa line, but then he's then, you know, within the Gaudiya line as far as instructions. You know what I'm, his Diksha line is mm-hmm. is mud is the Madhwa. But his Siksha line then is Gaudiya. So the point is it's where you follow. That's why the importance of what the guru says, that's then what's followed. You take that seriously, it works very nicely. You don't, then how are you going to get anywhere? Because if you can't have that exclusive focus on the spiritual master, how you'll have that exclusive focus on Krishna? Right? And prema is defined upon that affection is exclusively on Krishna. That's what makes it prema. If it has Krishna and, you know, something else, your motorcycle or something like that, then you have a problem. Right. Is that something?
Brahma ji, Shivji and Lakshmi ji, these three, they are not ready to leave their position, this mission. So now...
But it's not mentioning that they're not ready to leave their positions. It's not emphasizing that. It's just because their identity with their positions.
Yeah, because
that's, they're doing that as service to Krishna.
Yeah. So my question is, now we have the.
No, I'm only saying that because yeah. One has to be very careful that one doesn't take the moods beyond what is mentioned.
Yeah. So we find that we have the Brahma Sampradaya, the Shivji Sampradaya, and the Lakshmi Sampradaya. So these three Sampradayas. So the followers of these three sampradayas will be getting a destination, okay, not of Braja Krishna. It's not possible because they themselves...
No. Because that's not what they're offering. Ramanujacharya, is he talking about Braja Vrindavan?
Mm-hmm.
No, okay. Madhvacharya, is he talking about Braja Vrindavan?
Mm-hmm.
Right? Mm-hmm. Vishnu Swami, Nimbarka Swami, are they talking about Braja Vrindavan?
Mm-hmm.
No, so therefore it's not a problem because that's not where they're planning to go anyway. And so we see is then within the Madhva Sampradaya, then Lord Chaitanya appeared. And so then that aspect, those who follow within the Brahma, follow Lord Chaitanya, then they can go to Braj. Otherwise, if you're a Madhva just in the line, then you'll end up in some variety of Vaikuntha. you know, that could be Vaikuntha proper, it could be Ayodhya, it could be, what do you call it, Dwarka, any of this kind of flavor, wherever there's majesty, because that's how they worship the Lord, is in that majesty. So some like the two-armed form, some like the four, you know, prefer the four-armed form. Madhu is generally there in this, in the, what do you call it, Sarupya, that's their mukti. That's specifically their line. I think Shri's is a little bit more, you know, anything in Vaikuntha, you know, but they're specifically the same form as the Lord. So those who follow Lord Chaitanya within the Brahma, then they can go there. Does that make sense?
Not on the question of Sampradayas, the question about Ragatmika and Raganuga.
Ragatmika and Raganuga.
Yeah. We discussed a few classes back that Ragatmika is an eternal associates in key positions, and even if sadhana siddhas attain prema, and they technically become Ragatmika, still yeah. they fall in the mood of Raganuga. Is that correct?
Means they're following those ragatmikas, so therefore they're raganuga within ragatmika.
But those key positions, ragatmikas, they are not raganugas, because...
No. I mean, they are raganugas because they're following the mood of Radharani. So Radharani is the only, you could say, the actual ragatmika bhakta. In Nectar Devotion, then, Rupa Goswami points out that she's actually the only the servant of Krishna. Everybody else is the servant of the servant. You know, it's just, in other words, she's the servant. Then like Mother Jashoda and these other main positions, they're her servant. Right? And then they have their followers who are then serving them, and then it just keeps on going down. So all we're doing is, technically, once you come to prema, you're on the platform of ragatmika. Right? But there's a difficulty in that, is seeing that we're Raga Anugas, right, or Rupa Anugas, like that aspect of following in the footsteps, we, that always is there in the mind. Even when it comes to prema, one's still following the footsteps. That's why we bring it out. Technically, anybody who's on prema is Raga Atmika, because Rag is the life of their devotion, right? But some take, oh, then we're Raga, we're like this, and this Raga Nuga, you know. So then once we start making that kind of mood, then no, it's still Raga Nuga. So it's just to avoid any difficulties that people will put the Raga Nuga on the side for, you know, it's like we put sadhana, you know, Vaidhi on the side for Raga Nuga sadhana, then that, you know, that on the side for, you know, the Raga Nuga Bhakti and Bhava, and put that on the side for, you know, like this. So it's just, we have this tendency to, of socially trying to, you know, move up the ladder, you know, so that aspect that we're trying to avoid, that one is always following. Right? But within the pastimes, it just becomes part of what's going on, but the mentality is still that. Okay.
Larger, like a sort of technical question. Like
sort of technical, means it's not actually technical, it's a quasi technical.
Yeah.
You're going like to present it as if it's technical, but it's not going to be technical.
It's
okay.
Maharaj, we have been discussing very strongly on this Raga Nuga thing, you know, like this is, we have been clarifying the position of Raga Nuga, what they are, and giving all sort of details. Maharaj, are there such people, are there such devotees in ISKCON or in the world that they are chanting and they are so advanced that they are like done with Vaidhi Bhakti and they are like now want to do something extra? So because I just...
No, it's not
like
a matter of
wanting
to do extra, it's a matter of just being absorbed in Krishna.
Yeah.
See, Raga Nuga, we're taking this distinction that we're making here, we're talking about on the platform of prema. Like that. So within the realm of sadhana bhakti, then you have Vaidhi and Rag. The point is, those who are on the platform of Rag, you wouldn't know who they are anyway, because they will follow the Vaidhi so nicely. So it's just, it's a personal development. So therefore, it's not something to worry about.
Yes. So, are there people who are worrying about this? So many that, you know, because I'm like, I think that, you know, people should follow their vows. and read distinct books, preach, be like regular devotees as we were, as Prabhupada taught us. And what is happening to these people that they want to do all, explore all of these strange things?
But the,
what is the anartha
there? That's not a symptom that they're actually advanced.
I know.
Because the ones who are advanced, they're the ones that are doing what Prabhupada said. No, it's just a matter of these things are just the idea that there's something special, something different, something unique. You know, you're on the inside track. You've got something that no one else knows.
Yeah.
You know, stuff like that. It's just a natural distraction. Is that what I'm saying? So it's just that they'll get distracted. If this wasn't there, they'd be distracted by something else. You know, like ponytails or something, you know. Like that. So it's just a matter of these things are going to happen anyway. So it's just part of the mundane thing that you think that, that you can get something special and different. You know, it's just like anything in the material world. You think you'll put in very little work and get so much back because you know the secret thing. You know? You know, that's just there in any society. Like you go to any city in the world and there's those people that they know that little bistro, you know, around the corner, and this one knows that guy so he can get into, you know, this performance like that. And so they feel that it's special. So they're just trying to do the same thing in devotional service. But the point is it doesn't work like that. It's by Krishna's mercy. It's not because you know some tricks. It's not about the secondary. So it's just that people get distracted, like they get distracted with so many other things.
Maharaj, again the same point of Ragatika and Raganuga. I just want to confirm, like, the Nitya Siddhas are Ragatikas.
The Nitya Siddhas are Ragatikas.
Yeah. And then when the Sadhana Siddhas, they are on the Prema platform, they also are Ragatmikas.
When they come to the platform of Prema, then they're Ragatmikas, yes.
So basically then there is no distinction as such, you know, between the Nityas and the Sadhana Siddhas. They are like,
no, there's not. Once you come to that platform of Prema, there's no distinction made. Yeah.
But those who are Sadhana Siddhas maintain that particular attitude that they should be Ragatmikas. Towards the Ragatmikas.
The point is it's not about, I'm saying that they have that attitude, it's not that they are.
Yeah.
The point is we always have that attitude of servant of the servant.
Yes. Yeah.
So then what's the confusion?
There is no confusion.
There's no
confusion. Is it proper?
The point is we will always be following in the footsteps of those in front of us.
Mm-hmm.
We're following in the footsteps of the devotees, serving Srila Prabhupada. He's following Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, who's following Gaur Kishore Das Babaji Maharaj, who's following Bhakti Vinod Thakur, who's following like this,
mm-hmm.
up to Rupa Goswami.
Mm-hmm.
And so we'll always be doing that.
Mm-hmm.
So this idea that once you get to that position, then it's just, hey, you know, me and Bhakti Vinod Thakur, and, you know, hey, buddy, you know, wink, wink, you know, that kind of stuff, that's not going to happen. We're always going to be following. So I'm just pointing it out is that we will still be following. Not that there's a difference that there's some jivas that are identified as Ragatmika and Raganuga, because if we're taking that, what I'm mentioning is Ragatmika, is these main positions, Mother Jashoda, Sridham Subal, like this. You know, the ones that we hear their names. But there's thousands and thousands of devotees following them. Right? So they're following in the footsteps of their rag, but they're ragatmika themselves, because rag is the only thing they have. So we're just pointing out that they still follow in the footsteps. Otherwise, see, as we're reading about these eternal pastimes and about this platform of prema, but we tend to look at all that from our platform of mundane considerations. Yeah. Does that make sense? Yeah? No?
Yeah.
Srila Prabhupada adds, Krishna does not leave Vrindavan even for a moment. The Vrajavasis, Mother Jashoda, Krishna's friends and Krishna's conjugal lovers, the younger gopis with whom he dances, have very intimate relationships with Krishna. And when one follows in the footsteps of these devotees, Krishna is available. That's what we have to know. That's what we're going to be doing. It's not that we do that now and give it up later, because that's the impersonal concept, because we become that devotee. So just like we don't become Krishna, we don't become the devotee either. So that's why I'm pointing that out from that. But the point is once one comes to the platform of prema, that's ragatmika. Because raga is one's life and soul, right? That attachment to Krishna is one's life and soul. But still, your rag that you're following in the footsteps of those who are in front of you. So it's still called ragatmika, but we have to know that you're dealing, that you're following others. So just because we're familiar with the term ragatmika, Raganuga is being used, but then if we take it, no, but Raganuga means this and that, so then it makes it very difficult. Right? You know what I'm saying? So, you know, it's like saying, okay, there's that tree, and then see that branch going out to the left? Okay, and then at the tip of that, just above it, there's a big, round, white, bright thing. That's the moon. Right? So we got to it through this other thing. And then we say, you know, so through the tree you get to the moon, so then the moon is the tree. Yeah, you get to the moon only by through the tree. No, you know what I'm saying? So one has to understand that analogies have their limit, but we have to take them by what is being expressed, because otherwise if we just go by the words only, then we're using the secondary to try to define. We're trying to define the primary, which technically you can't define. So we're just trying to give some idea, you know, does that make sense? As much as we can. Since there's this, sometimes there are those in the past who's overemphasized the ragatmika over the raganuga, so that's why we're saying this. You know what I said? Otherwise, if that had been done, we wouldn't need to bring it up. In fact, probably most likely no one had ever even used the term ragatmika. I mean, the acharyas use the term. It just means you have to understand is our connection with all these things is much broader than maybe you bumped into. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. So we know plenty of devotees who use the terms. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? But the point is that it still maintains this position, mm-hmm. that we don't become equal with. Mm-hmm. Although the Nitya Siddhi expansions of Krishna always remain with Krishna, if those engaged in sadhana siddhi follow in the footsteps of Krishna Nitya Siddhi associates, such sadhana siddhis also can easily attain Krishna without difficulty. Right? Then they become Nitya Siddhis. So once you come to that platform, then you're considered a Nitya Siddha. Means if one wants to get technical, one can point out who's always been a Nitya Siddha and who is a sadhana siddha and now has become a Nitya Siddha. Like that. But that's only pointed out so that we can understand that you can get to these elevated positions by following the process of sadhana.
That was the example demonstrated by Dronam Dhara. They were sadhana siddhas and then Nandan Yashoda. Chakravarti transformation.
Yes. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur points out that though bound by his devotee, Krishna is still able to liberate others. That is illustrated in the following pastime. Right? So even though he's bound by their love, it doesn't mean he can't therefore deal with anybody else, because this might come up. Right? That if he's so absorbed in the love of the Brajabasis, then will he hear our prayers? Will he, you know, take care of us also? Right? But that's the whole point. Krishna is able to do that also.
When you say sadhana siddhas can easily can attain Krishna.
Yes.
We talk about them becoming nitya siddhas, isn't it? Attaining prema.
Yes.
Can we say that it technically says that they will reach Gokul and after that reach Goloka?
But that's the same thing. Who do you reach in Gokul?
Krishna.
Yeah, so that's the point. So you can easily attain Krishna without difficulty.
Because we said, the question is from that we said that it's not possible to attain prema in this body.
You can get to prema in this body, but it's very, very rare. That's why it's everybody goes through Gokul. They don't go straight to Goloka. But those who, while still in this body, through meditation, that means through their service, have come up to the platform of Bhava, and then render service in Gokul, in their eternal form, and from that come up to the platform of Prema, then when they leave the body, they have attained Vastu Siddhi, so they just go straight to Goloka. That's there, but the point is generally speaking, everyone goes to Gokul. Because the point is, you remember Krishna at the time of death, you go to Gokul. No, whatever the position, whether you are more advanced, less advanced, the point is then whatever position you're in, from there, then you continue. So. Yeah. Yeah. Sri Sugata Goswami continued, while Mother Jashoda was very busy with household affairs, the Supreme Lord Krishna observed twin Arjuna trees, known as Jamal Arjuna, which in a former millennium had been the demigod sons of Kuvera. In their former birth, these two sons, known as Nalakuvara and Manigriva, were extremely opulent and fortunate. But because of pride and false prestige, they did not care about anyone, and thus Narad Muni cursed them to become trees. Srila Prabhupada writes in Krishna book, after binding her son, Mother Jashoda engaged herself in household affairs. At that time, bound up to the wooden mortar, Krishna could see a pair of trees before him, which were known as Arjuna trees. The great reservoir of pleasure, Lord Sri Krishna, thus thought to himself, Mother Jashoda, first of all, left without feeding me sufficient milk, and therefore I broke the pot of yogurt and distributed the stock butter in charity to the monkeys. Now she has bound me up with a wooden mortar, so I shall do something more mischievous than before. And thus he thought of pulling down the two very tall Arjuna trees. Right, because, you know, that's the whole point. The boy is trying to be mischievous and the mother is trying to keep everything in control. That's the interaction. Pratigya. Yogis cannot reach Krishna, but for pure devotees, Krishna is already caught. Hetu, because bhaktas can capture Krishna simply by love and affection. Purport 10. Udaharana. Yogis cannot capture Krishna by severe penances and austerities, but Mother Jashoda, despite all obstacles, was finally able to catch Krishna without difficulty. Also, in Bhagavad Gita says that Krishna became the chariot driver of Arjuna. This is the difference between a yogi and a bhakta. 10 and 21. This is the difference between a yogi and a bhakta. Bhaktas enter even the planet of Krishna very easily, but the less intelligent yogis and jnanis, by their meditation, remain running after Krishna. Even if they enter Krishna's effulgence, they fall down. By his one plenary portion as Paramatma, the Lord controls innumerable universes with all their demigods, yet he agrees to be controlled by a devotee. In the Upanishads, it is said that the Supreme Personality Godhead can run with more speed than the mind. But here we see that although Krishna wanted to avoid being arrested by his mother, he was finally defeated and Mother Jashoda captured him. Lakshmi Sahasra Satasam Brahma Sevyamanam, Brahma Samhita 529. Krishna is served by hundreds and thousands of goddesses of fortune. Nonetheless, he steals butter like one who is poverty stricken. Yamaraj, the controller of all living entities, fears the order of Krishna, yet Krishna is afraid of his mother's stick. These contradictions cannot be understood by one who is not a devotee. But a devotee can understand how powerful is unalloyed devotional service to Krishna. It is so powerful that Krishna can be controlled by an unalloyed devotee. This Britya Vatsyata does not mean that he is under the control of the servant. Rather, he is under the control of the servant's pure love. Krishna is always fully independent. When he becomes subordinate to his devotees, This is the display of Ananda Chinmaya Rasa, the humor of transcendental qualities that increases his transcendental pleasure. Right, it's all for his pleasure. He that affection that's there, that service, that's what's nice to him, because he already controls everything, because he is everything. Right? You sit around all day going, wow, I can move my arm. Look at that. I can even look at this, watch this. Ooh, moving the fingers, hey, I can turn it around, so we don't do that. Right? So Krishna being God and being in control of everything and everything's him, whoopee. For him. So therefore, that interaction of the love for the devotees being based on platform where it's for expressing the affection. His Majesty is a very hard environment to express affection. Like that. There is some form is there, yes, but the sweetness is when it's not there for human pastimes. Because in Vaikuntha, those aren't human pastimes. He's God. He's not human. But in Goloka, he's human. He takes that aspect. So he performs human pastimes. Right. So that aspect then gives a different flavor. So it's about that and about those kind of aspects. So in this way then he's controlled by the devotee. But it's the love. It's not that he's actually controlled, because he controls everything. So it's not, you can't possibly control him by the activity you do, because the energy for your activity comes from Krishna anyway. How will that control him? But the love that is there, that controls him. So, no? Kind of? You were kind of hoping that you could actually control it?
No.
Oh, no, I'm just joking. Hey, wait a minute. Rather, he is under the control of the servant's pure love. Krishna is always fully independent. Right, because that's being brought out. Otherwise, if he's not independent, how does he deal with everybody's love? When he becomes subordinate to his devotees, this is the display of Ananda Chinmaya Rasa, the humor of transcendental qualities that increases transcendental pleasure. Everyone worships Krishna as the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and therefore he sometimes desires to be controlled by someone else. Such a controller can be no one else but a pure devotee. Everyone is seeking Krishna, for he is the supersoul of all individual souls. Everyone loves his body and wants to protect it, because he is within the body as the soul. And everyone loves the soul because the soul is part and parcel of the supersoul. Therefore, everyone is actually seeking to achieve happiness by reviving his relationship with the supersoul. As the Lord says in Bhagavad Gita, Vedaischa Sadaraham Eva Vedyaha. By all the Vedas, it is I who am to be known. Therefore, the karmis, jnanis, yogis, and saintly persons are all seeking Krishna. But by following the footsteps of the devotees who are in a direct relationship with Krishna, especially the inhabitants of Vrindavan, one can reach the supreme position of associating with Krishna. As it is said, Vrindavanam parityajya param eka nagacchati. Krishna does not leave Vrindavan even for a moment. The Vrajavasis, Mother Jashoda, Krishna's friends and Krishna's conjugal lovers, the younger gopis with whom he dances, have very intimate relationships with Krishna. If one follows in the footsteps of these devotees, Krishna is available. Although the Nitya Siddha expansions of Krishna always remain with Krishna, if those engaged in Sadhana Siddhi follow in the footsteps of Krishna's Nitya Siddha associates, such Sadhana Siddhas can also easily attain Krishna without difficulty. Because we have to understand it's still a sadhana, because bhava is also considered sadhana. But there are those who are attached to bodily concepts of life. Lord Brahma and Lord Shiva, for example, have very prestigious positions, unless they have the sense of being very exalted Ishwaras. In other words, because Lord Brahma and Lord Shiva are guna avatars and have exalted positions, they have some small sense of being like Krishna. But the pure devotees who inhabit Vrindavan do not possess any bodily conception. They are fully dedicated to the service of the Lord in sublime affection, prema. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has therefore recommended prema pumarta mahan. The highest perfection of life is prema, pure love in relationship with Krishna.
This Upanaya actually should have been for me in other words.
Did you hear me say Upanaya? No, I said Udaharana and kept reading.
Yeah, but for me, I just want to understand this, just the last
thing. It starts from therefore, top line, Upanaya, until the end of the paragraph. From until the end of the paragraph is Upanaya. Because there it's making a comparison of all the three karmis, gyanis.
It means you could take from therefore the karmis, gyanis, yogis, you may be able to take it from there, from the second page. But that's if you're using this purport, because every purport is going to have these five breakdowns. So you have to just see is what is that taking. In other words, if you took all the upanayas of the chapter and then look at where they're going. You know what I'm saying? So there's a flow of the purports. One purport goes on to the next. So sometimes the verse may be going into something else, but the purports, they will continue as a flow. So you could, even if you didn't read the verses, just read the purports, and it would be a consistent reading. It wouldn't be, okay, because it's a different verse, it's different. You would see that flow. So then it's a matter of trying to see what overall is the point. Since the point is yogis cannot reach Krishna, but for pure devotees, Krishna is easily already caught, then then you're explaining how that is, why the devotees can do that, how even Shiva and Brahman, they cannot do that. Right? But the pure devotees who are inhabitants of Vrindavan do not possess any bodily conception. They are dedicated to service of the Lord, the sublime affection. Right? You know, that kind of thing, that's then what's there. All these other things showing how the yogis can't do, Brahma, Shiva can't do, all these other things like those. And so, because of all these different things, but the devotees are able to do, that's then your upanaya.
Okay. Can we sometimes combine upanaya and nidana?
You'll sometimes see purports as like that, or maybe one sentence, or... Most of the time you see the Nigaman is one sentence and the Upanaya is like maybe two sentences or three sentences, sometimes one. You just see at the very end, one will say, generally one says thus and the other says therefore. Right? So the bulk of the explanation is going to be the Udaharana. Because that's giving the reasons, defeating any doubts. The whole thing Vishaya, the Purva Paksha, the Uttara, all that, that's all going on in Upanaya. So if there's no doubt, you're just explaining it. If there's a doubt, that will be dealt with. If there's many doubts, they'll be dealt with one after another. And sometimes then, you see the Upanaya is so big that the Udaharana is so big that there's paragraph after paragraph, like sometimes these 10-page purports. There's still, the pratigya, these things are all still short. The pratigya is generally one sentence. The hetu may be the rest of the paragraph, depending on how it's being broken up. And so then you see that there's big paragraphs taking all different angles of vision. So that's all the Udaharana. And then at the very end, then you'll have that. So the point is the pratigya, hetu, upanaya, and nigamana will always generally be quite short. But that the udaharana will be quite, that may be very lengthy. And if there's a point within that you've established within the upanaya that needs some explanation, it might be explained there. You know, so it's just a matter of, so sometimes you see the pratigya and hetu are combined, or like this, because small purports sometimes they don't need to get so technical in breaking it down into the five obvious positions. They're sometimes combined. And much of the time when you see Prabhupada then gives the Nigamana, it's taking the Pratigya and then taking it to the next point how you apply it. Just like we say, yogis cannot reach Krishna, but for pure devotees, Krishna is already caught. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has therefore recommended prema pumarta maha. The highest perfection of life is prema, pure love in relationship with Krishna. You understand? So sometimes it's just stating the same thing again, but much of the time you see Prabhupada will take it further. You know, so what you should do with it, how you should therefore accept it or require it. So.
Can you have something like this? Krishna than the Hetu. And because of the Hetu, the reasoning, you know, a doubt has come up. Which is, so the opening of Udharana is the doubt itself.
If there is a doubt, then it opens, but Prabhupada then will say, some may say. That's the doubt.
Yeah.
The point is Upanaya is explanation of the thing. If there's no doubt, it's just an explanation. If there's a doubt, that's dealt with also.
Udharana.
Yes.
Yeah.
But try to catch that the Udharana deals with the explanation, whether they're dealing with the doubt or not.
Yes.
So you don't have to open with the doubt to try to find a doubt and make the whole thing.
But
you don't have to. If there is, yes.
Yes, ma'am. Only if there is.
Only if there is,
yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
In this one, there's not.
This one, there's not.
And all the other ones before have not been. Vedanta Sutra, now that's got downs. Because before there was the problem, oh, but this is saying, you know, Vishaya and this and that, what happened to our Udaharana? It's the same thing. If you're dealing in the Udaharana with the doubt, it's called Purvapaksha. Right? Shamshaya, and then their explanation of the reason they think that, that is the Udaharana. I mean, is the Upanaya. Then when we deal with it back, that's is the Uttara. Now, if we're just dealing back and we're finishing, we'll just say Siddhanta. But if there's going to be another doubt, then we just say Uttara. And then it'll be the next doubt. Because on one point, you can have many, many, many angles. So they might have so many doubts on one thing, or it might go into something else. Yes? No?
Yes, ma'am. Thank you.
Yes. Okay, important verse 10.9.21. Nayam sukapo bhagavan dehinam gopika sutaha janinam chatma bhujanam yata bhakti matam iha. The Supreme Personality of Krishna, the son of Mother Yashoda, is accessible to devotees engaged in spontaneous and loving service, but he is not as easily accessible to mental speculators. To those striving for self-realization by severe austerities and penances, those striving for severe parents, or for those who consider the body the same as the self, Sukadev Goswami. Chapter 10, Deliverance of the Jamalar Junitors. Patigya, the curse of a devotee is also to be regarded as mercy. Because as Krishna, God is all good, a Vaishnava is also all good. Whatever he does is good for everyone. When one is face to face with the sun, there is no longer darkness for one's eyes. Similarly, when one is face to face with a sadhu, a devotee who is fully determined and surrendered to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, one will no longer be subject to material bondage. It may be argued that whereas someone may receive a sadhu with great respect, someone else may not receive a sadhu with such respect. A sadhu, however, is always equipoised towards everyone. Because of being a pure devotee, a sadhu is always ready to deliver Krishna consciousness without discrimination. When a sadhu chastises or punishes someone, he does not do so for revenge. Vaishnavas are good physicians. Right, so Vaishnavas are good physicians, just conditioned souls are really, really, really bad patients. They know how to protect a person from material disease. Thus, they are never in tamaguna. Vaishnavas are always situated on the transcendental platform, the Brahman platform, and therefore they cannot be subject to mistakes or the influence of modes of material nature. Thus, whatever they do, after full consideration, is meant just to lead everyone back home, back to Godhead. Right. So we saw things coming up in the previous chapter, like this. You know that how. Dealings and this and that, and how you're dealing, you're chastising, you're doing these things. So someone might have a doubt, especially if you're if you're somehow or another stuck in the, you know, especially 1980s, 1990s kind of mode, then anything that has authority to it or anything that has any power or strength to it, then we freak out that this is not nice, this is not good, everything like that. Mm-hmm. So we have to be, so now we see is that it's going through this point that no, it's about this being situated on the transcendental platform. That's then what we're trying to do. So as you're seeing, we're trying to protect the person from material disease. Right? That's then what the acharyas are explaining. Right? So they're explaining the process of devotional service and how one can progress through that, but at the same time as the distractions one can have in that, then they're pointing out the weaknesses. Right? So that doesn't mean things aren't done. We have to be careful of that weakness and that distraction, because there's plenty. There's 8,400,000 distractions. Right? And then there's pure devotional service. So, you know, easy to get distracted. Does that make sense? Chapter 10 summarizes questions and answers. Maharaj Parikit asked Srila Sukadeva Goswami question 10-11 of Srimad Bhagavatam. Question 10-11. Srimad Bhagavatam 10-10-1. King Parikit inquired from Sukadeva Goswami, O great and powerful saint, what was the cause of Nalakuvaras and Manigrivas having been cursed by Narad Muni? What did they do that was so abominable that even Narada, the great sage, became angry at them? Kindly describe this to me. Srila Sukadeva Goswami answers this question verses 2 through 23. The rhetorical questions uttered by Narad Muni in verses 11, 12, and 18, and by Nalakuvara Manigriva in verse 32, do not come under this study. Adhyaya Prakashitam. This chapter describes how Krishna broke the twin Arjuna trees, from which Nalakuvara and Manigriva, the sons of Kuvera, then came out. Nalakuvara and Manigriva were great devotees of Lord Shiva, but because of material opulence, they became so extravagant and senseless that one day they were enjoying with naked girls in a lake and shamelessly walking here and there. Right? Because the point is one's not supposed to be naked out in public like that. It's just not done. But they're so shameless and they're just so, how you say, maddened by their wealth and false prestige that they, you know, just think it's all right and cool, you know. Even though they're with these naked girls don't really like guys walking around naked, right? Even if they're naked, still, they don't like it. But the guys think that that's exactly what is cool, and women really, really dig it, but they actually don't. But that's the whole point, is the material consciousness then takes this on.
Maybe they're from Scandinavia.
Maybe they're from Scandinavia, but then nobody cares. It's not that they walk around. They just don't care. It's not that, you know, like that. Like one devotee that's from that side. He was, you know, he grew up there, but he's been living now in other places. And he said that they were, because in Finland you have all kinds of islands in the archipelago down there. And he said one of the advantages of living on one of those islands, because only the people on the island are there. Very rare does anybody else come, and if they do, they're generally Finns anyway, or Swedes, so it doesn't matter. It says you can walk around all day naked and nobody cares, you know, like that. You know, when you're out and, you know, in the rural area, you know, wouldn't, you know, walk down Main Street naked, but, you know that's, but, you know. But the point is in the home kind of scene and walking in there and going down to the rivers and going to the saunas, then hey, you know, just they don't care. They just don't. So it's not for them that they're so absorbed in like sensual kind of things. To them it's just, you know, they're already trees. Trees don't care. So they're just very intelligent trees. Like that. Yeah, so Nalakuvara and Manigriva aren't Finnish, are Swedish, so, or Danish. They also are into that. Or one Danish person said, yeah, come up, spend some time with us in that, right? And the group is all kind of older, you know, 40s, 50s, and all that. And they're going, I really don't want to go up there and spend time. Why not? But your good friend says, I really hate looking at naked old people. because they know, because they're Danish, if they go to their summer house, they're all going to be naked. That's just what you do at the summer house. So, like that, she says, I'm not into that. That's like, yeah.
It's also supportive.
Yes. But, you know, polar bears don't wear a lot either. But, suddenly Narad Muni passed by, but they were so maddened by their wealth and false prestige that even though they saw Narad Muni present, they remained naked and were not even ashamed, right? Because they thought they were so cool that everybody would, you know, be fine. In other words, because of opulence and false prestige, they lost their sense of common decency. Of course, it is the nature of the material qualities that when one becomes very much opulent in terms of wealth and a prestigious position, one loses one's sense of etiquette and does not care about anyone, even a sage like Narad Muni. So that's when you know someone's going down the other side of the cycle of samsara. Is that when they have all those material facilities and they don't behave nicely with anybody. They're so proud that they think that they don't have to. Then you've met a person at the top of the cycle going down. And if you see someone's very wealthy and that, but they're very properly behaved, they always deal with all the nice etiquette and everything, then you know that they're going up. Like that. So that's just, so here, it's just once they hit that, then they, you know, it's down the other side. For such bewildered persons, ahankara vimudatma, who especially deride devotees, the proper punishment is to be, again, stricken with poverty, right? Because if you have so much, and because of that, the prestige, the position, the wealth, one is misusing that and becomes so proud and not follows etiquette, in other words, doesn't follow human culture, then the proper, as Prabhupada says, the proper punishment is to have that removed. Right? Then if one takes that humble mood and that kind of thing like that, gets that attitude properly, one can start up again. But if down on that, one is still trying to, and all this, and there's so much envy, and this and that, one will just keep going down. Okay. The Vedic rules and regulations prescribe how to control the false sense of prestige by the practice of yama, niyama, and so on. Tapasa brahmacharena sama samena cha damena cha. Srimad Bhagavatam 6.1.13. Right? So you learn those as a brahmachari, right? That's the whole thing. In one's life before marriage, that's where you learn all these different kinds of etiquettes and behavior. Right? And having learned that, then in household life, then you apply it. So if they had learned that properly, then they would have behaved properly. Okay, they're demigods there, and wherever they are, hanging out and doing, you know, whatever that they do. But when Narad Muni came along, even though what they were doing wasn't that great, but when he came, then they should have, you know, tried to cover up and this, and then respectful and all that. And then it's just demigods, you know. That's what do you expect? You know, it's like, you know, Swedes. What do you call it? What do you want?
Kuvera is considered a yaksha.
Kuvera is a yaksha.
So they're yakshas.
It appears so. But good-looking yakshas.
What do you expect? Huh? Are they considered high-end demigods?
They're not high-end demigods. But he's the head of the yakshas. So being a sadasya, then whether he looks like the other yakshas or not. But, you know, it's our dragon, the guy holding up the dragon, that's a yaksha. No, but if you're wealthy as anything, who cares? You know? The girls look like that too. You know, so. It's like that. But he's the head of them, so maybe he's in a different position. The sadasyas seem to be in a different... You know, it's like Hanuman. Him looking like a monkey and the monkeys that are there, then there's a slight difference. So. A poor man can be convinced very easily that the prestige of an opulent position in this material world is temporary, but a rich man cannot. Because it's something he wants to obtain, and having obtained it, he wants it to last forever. Therefore, to try to convince him it's temporary is not appreciated. Therefore, Narad Muni set an example by cursing these two persons, Nalukuvara and Manigriva, to become dull and unconscious like trees. This was a fit punishment, right? Because they were unconscious in the association of Narad Muni. So naturally, to take up an unconscious position. And they're unconscious and naked. And so trees are unconscious and naked. So it's the natural fitting. So that's the thing. It always matches very nicely. That's the thing you see with all the Vedic curses. They match what was the punch of what is wrong. Like that. But we see with persons like Narad Muni, it doesn't end there. It's a curse in such a way that they get an opportunity to become Krishna conscious. Right? Because how will they be Krishna conscious if they're so puffed up? But having spent some time as trees, then if when they're freed from that by Krishna, then they'll be able to surrender. Okay? But because Krishna is always merciful, even though they were punished, they were very fortunate enough to see the Supreme Personality of Godhead face to face. Therefore, the punishment given by Vaishnavas is not at all punishment. Rather, it is a kind of mercy. By the curse of the Devarshi, Nakula, Nalukuvara and Manigriva became twin Arjuna trees and remained in the courtyard of Mother Jashoda and Nanda Maharaj, waiting for the opportunity to see Krishna directly. But Krishna, by the desire of his devotee, uprooted these trees. So the devotee means Narad Muni. Uprooted these Yamal Arjuna trees. And when Nalukuvara and Manigriva were thus delivered by Krishna after 1,000 years of the Devatas, that's a good enough time to contemplate. Their old consciousness revived, and they offered Krishna prayers suitable to be offered by demigods. Having thus gotten the opportunity to see Krishna face to face, they understood how merciful Narad Muni was. Probably up to that point, they weren't too impressed. And therefore, they expressed their indebtedness to him and thanked him. Then, after circumambulating the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna, they departed for their respective abodes. That's better. Shloka Anusharana. Verses 1 to 23, the abominable activities of Nalukuvara and Manigriva. Verses 24 to 28, Sri Krishna uproots the Yamala Arjuna trees. Verses 29 to 38, the prayers of Nalukuvara and Manigriva. Verses 39 to 43, Lord Krishna gives the brothers benedictions. Verses 1 to 23, the abominable activities of Nalukuvara and Manigriva. King Parikit inquired from Sukadev Goswami, O great and powerful sage, saint, what was the cause of Nalukuvara and Manigriva's having been cursed by Narad Muni? What did they do that was so abominable that even Narada, the great sage, became angry at them? Kindly describe this to me. Right? Because Narada, being such a great sage, generally wouldn't become angry. So that he did, it was, you know, because of their position, their etiquette, and how they were getting so far from being Krishna conscious. Because if they're worshipping Shiva, they're behaving in a proper way, they have the etiquette that they could, in coming in contact with devotional service, then take it up nicely. But the behavior they were showing at this time was so bad that it's useless for anything. Right? It's uncultured, it's not good as a devotee of Shiva, as a devotee of Krishna. As just, you know, as a demigod, it's just inappropriate. Sukadev Goswami said, O King Parikit, because the two sons of Kuvera had been elevated to the association of Lord Shiva, of which they were very much proud, they were allowed to wander in the garden attached to Kailash Hill on the bank of the Mandakini River. Taking advantage of this, they used to drink a kind of liquor called Varuni. Accompanied by women singing after them, they would wander in that garden of flowers, their eyes always rolling in intoxication. Okay, so Kuvera is a favorite of Lord Shiva, because he's a servant of Lord Shiva. So then naturally then his sons, Nalukuvara and Manigriva, then they could also get that association. And then because of this, they were, you know, able to wander in a garden connected with Kailash. So Kailash Mountain and all that, because the Mandakini only goes along the tops of mountains. It's only with the Ganges she comes down to the, you know, the ground and then runs along the ground where anybody can come. But in the heavenly planets, you have to go up to the top of the mountain to bathe in the Mandaki. Like that. So, therefore, Lord Shiva being who he is, then the river is moving through them. Srila Prabhupada comments. This verse mentions some of the material advantages afforded to persons associated with or devoted to Lord Shiva. Apart from Lord Shiva, if one is a devotee of any other demigod, one receives some material advantages. Foolish people, therefore, become devotees of demigods. This has been pointed out and criticized by Lord Krishna in Bhagavad Gita 7.20. Kamaish taish tair harita jnana prapadyante nyadevata. Those who are not devotees of Krishna have a taste for women, wine, and so forth. And therefore they have been described as hrita jnana, bereft of sense, right? Because we hear, and so forth. You know, then you add to it whatever you like. But if you don't have the women and wine, then there's no meaning to the so forth.
Yes.
That's the whole point. The Krishna conscious movement can very easily point out such foolish persons, for they have been indicated in Bhagavad Gita 7.15, where Lord Krishna says, Namam duskritino mudha prapadyante naradhamaha mayaya pahritajnana asuram bhavam ashritaha. Those miscreants who are grossly foolish, lowest among mankind, those whose knowledge is stolen by illusion, and who partake of the atheistic nature of demons, do not surrender unto me. Anyone who is not a devotee of Krishna and does not surrender to Krishna must be considered Naradhama, the lowest of men, and Duskriti, one who always commits sinful activities, right? So that one doesn't surrender to Krishna, that's because of that Naradhama aspect. So we say, oh, but you know, we came in contact, you know, with Krishna, and because a devotee spoke like this, then they rejected Krishna consciousness and this and that and all that. But that same statement by the same devotee or by other devotees, exact same statement, made hundreds and thousands of devotees. But we'll say, no, it's the preaching is the problem. Not that we don't adjust and all that, but the point is the real reason the person didn't take it is because they're a Naradhama. And we shouldn't try to say, oh yes, I came in contact with the devotees and after so many years, only then I surrendered because of how they were behaving. That's because you're a Naradhama. But devotional service is so powerful that those little bits of coming in contact then starts to purify and you move forward. Right? If one contacts and was just very slow, it just means there's not so much Ajata Sukriti. Right? One's not a Naradhama. But if one rejects the process and then it's only after some time that we take it up because devotees this, devotees that, that's just being a Naradhama. That has to be appreciated. Though it will absolutely not be appreciated. Because it has to be someone else's fault why I didn't immediately just surrender to Krishna and go back to Godhead on the spot, right? So that we have to see is that Ajata Sukriti is there, so if there is none, then one doesn't take it up. But by the association of devotees, taking prasad, hearing kirtan, you know, bumping into them, seeing in them in their bed sheets and their two different colored socks, you become purified. And then from that, gradually, then one is able to get that faith. Does that make sense? So that's the real reason. Right? So anyone who's not a devotee of Krishna and does not surrender must be considered a Naradhama. Right? If one's not a devotee, then, you know, that's another thing. But having come in contact, he won't surrender. That's a Naradhama. If he's not a devotee, then he's a mudha, mayaya pratijnana, asura, bhavam, like this. But having come in contact and he rejects it, that's a Naradhama. Does that make sense? So that's what makes them distinct from the others. That's why they're lower. The other ones are just non-devotees. So they're impious. But the Naradhamas are more impious. You know, or dedicated to impiety. Like that. Does that make sense?
They are more... Dushkriti is also also there, even those who commit sinful activities. So
yeah, they're all duskritinas. All these four. So you have mudas, naradamas, mayaya pratijnanas, and asuras, like that. So they're all duskritinas. Like that. Duskritina. Yeah, you can make that into a, what do you call it? A Latino movie, right? Duskritina. Huh?
Duskritinos.
Yeah, duskritinos. Yes.
Right. This Naradama, I think Srila Prabhupada said, is 99.9%.
Yes. No, they're the most. In other words, they come in contact, they could, but they reject. That makes them a duskritino. Before that they would be in the other three. So that's the point, is why are they? So it's pointed out, Vishwanath points out, is the Naradama thinks he's quite sophisticated and quite intelligent. And because of his discrimination, he sees that Krishna consciousness is not actually a very viable thing. That makes him a Naradama. The Muda is just a bit of a Muda, right? You know, he's not that sophisticated. So it's just, there's no taste, there's no interest, just because he's so overburdened by the modes of ignorance. Right? But the Naradama, you see, has that combination of passion and ignorance. Right? So it's just, so it comes out. So much of that, that's the fun part, is the general situation of the Naradama is the one that we're taking up, is that's the social position that is going to make the movement fine and wonderful. It's like, yeah, right? Yeah.
Thus
there is no difficulty in finding out who is the third class or fourth class man, for one's position can be understood simply by this critical test. Is he or is he not a devotee of Krishna? Right? So if he's not, then that drops him down. And if he's really not into it, then it moves him into fourth class. Because third class could learn. So in other words, if it's just a matter of they come every week, you argue with them and this, and they go back and come back in with next week, like this, they're moving forward. Because otherwise, why'd they come back? You know, and after so many times of that and all that's prashad, then at some point they surrender. Right? So that's third class, because they're learning. Right? Fourth class means they don't learn. So that's the position of the Naradama. He doesn't learn. That's why he's the lowest. He's more sophisticated and considers him socially better than a mudha, but technically, as far as the devotional line goes, he's in a worse position. You know, because the mudha just doesn't think about it, but the Naradama, he talks about it, tells his friends, and makes it a point, and like that. Does that make sense? Why are devotees of the demigods greater in number than the Vaishnavas? The answer is given herein. Vaishnavas are not interested in such fourth-class pleasures as wine and women, nor does Krishna allow them such facilities. Right? So devotees aren't interested, and even if they are interested, Krishna doesn't allow it to be arranged.
Let me share a point. That as kids, you know, in India, like when we are very mischievous, when our grandparents used to tell us, you are a Naradama.
Unfortunately, I only heard kids.
When we are kids and when we are mischievous, you know, in the childhood, then our grandparents tell that you are a Naradama.
Oh, I see. When you were, okay, as a kid, when you behave badly, your grandparents would say you're a Naradama. Part of the cultural upbringing. It's like little kids getting upset with another kid, they're behaving bad, and they go, "You're a Mayavadi." So you learn young what's good and what's bad.
In the West, it is different.
Sorry?
In the West, it is different.
Yes, yes. Yeah, no, so that's the advantages of growing up in the Vedic kind of. Sukadeva Goswami continued. Within the waters of the Mandakini Ganges, which were crowded with gardens of lotus flowers, the two sons of Kuvera would enjoy young girls, just like two male elephants enjoying in the water with female elephants. Srila Prabhupada comments. People generally go to the Ganges to be purified of the effects of sinful life. But here's an example of how foolish persons enter the Ganges to become involved in sinful life. It is not that everyone becomes purified by entering the Ganges. Everything, spiritual and material, depends on one's mental condition. Right. So the Ganges is just for, so because they have a connection with Shiva, that's only reason they can move in that garden and the Mandakini is there. Otherwise they would have to make their own endeavor to schlep up the mountain and take bath in the Ganges. Right? But because of that connection they were very proud, and so therefore then they didn't you gotta get up the mountain, right? Yeah. So, everything spiritual, material depends on one's mental condition. Depending on how you're thinking, it makes it material or spiritual. Depending on how you're applying it, it's successful or not. So everything is about one's mental condition. That's why we put that emphasis on that aspect of Prajumna. That the spirit that we have, that mood, that's actually the central point. It means devotional service, but where you're going to start it is that you have the right mentality. Then you can see the benefits of devotional service, the knowledge of devotional service, being engaged in devotional service, and the ultimate goal of devotional service. But otherwise, if the attitude's not right, then one remains, say, Naradama. Srila Prabhupada writes in Krishna book, the two great demigods, Nala Kuvara and Manigriva, were sons of the treasurer of the demigods, Kuvara, who was a great devotee of Lord Shiva. By the grace of Lord Shiva, Kuvara's material opulences had no limit. He's the treasurer for the demigods. He does all right, right? By Lord Shiva's blessings. Such as a rich man's son often become addicted to wine and women, so these two sons of Kuvara were also addicted to wine and sex. Right, because you can't have someone who's the son of someone very rich and they take it seriously how you have to deal properly with the money, everything in the etiquette, and behave nicely. And then you have no problem. But it's not an uncommon thing also that the sons of these rich men, they just get addicted to the facilities. And they have no idea actually how to deal properly with the facilities they have. Therefore, it's lost. You know, it's either put into some kind of a trust or this or that, and then they'll get a little bit because they're sons, but they won't get the money. You know, so. Or they'll get it and it'll be gone. Sukadeva Goswami continued, O Maharaj Parikit, by some auspicious opportunity for the two boys, the great saint Devarshi Narada once appeared there by chance. Seeing them intoxicated, right, because Lord Shiva is his brother, so, you know, he might show up and... because they hang out a lot and discuss, you know, Krishna consciousness. Seeing them intoxicated with rolling eyes, he could understand their situation. Srila Prabhupada comments, Narada appeared in the garden to give the two sons of Kuvara the seed of devotional service, even though they were intoxicated. Saintly persons know how to bestow mercy upon the fallen souls. Sukadeva Goswami continued, upon seeing Narada, the naked young girls of the demigods were very much ashamed. Afraid of being cursed, they covered their bodies with their garments. But the two sons of Kuvara did not do so. Instead, not caring about Narada, they remained naked. Seeing the two sons of the demigods naked and intoxicated by opulence and false prestige, Devarshi Narada, in order to show them special mercy, desired to give them a special curse. Thus he spoke as follows. Srila Prabhupada comments. Although in the beginning Narad Muni appeared very angry and cursed them, at the end the two demigods Nalakuvara and Manigriva were able to see the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna, face to face. Thus the curse was ultimately auspicious and brilliant. One has to judge what kind of curse Narada placed upon them. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur gives herein a good example. When a father finds his child deeply asleep, but the child has to take some medicine to cure some disease, the father pinches the child so that the child will get up and take the medicine. In a similar way, Narad Muni cursed Nalakuvara and Manigriva in order to cure their disease of material blindness. Srila Jiva Goswami writes in his Priti Sandarbha, Anucheda 76, Agastya Muni was not angry when he was not offered respect by Maharaj Indradyumna. The sage acted as he did only to teach the king how to act properly, honor the Vaishnavas. For the same reason, Narad Muni cursed the two sons of Kubera. And so he's not actually angry, he just sees this is the best way that they are going to be benefited. Narad Muni said, among all the attractions of material enjoyment, the attraction of riches bewilders one's intelligence more than having beautiful bodily features. Taking birth in an aristocratic family and being learned, right? Because you can have those and not necessarily be rich. You know, but when one's rich, that then one bewilders one. One doesn't see things properly. When one is uneducated but falsely puffed up by wealth, the result is that one engages his wealth in enjoying wine, women, and gambling. Srila Prabhupada comments, among the three modes of material nature, goodness, passion, and ignorance, people are certainly conducted by the lower qualities, namely passion and ignorance, and especially by passion. Conducted by the mode of passion, one becomes more and more involved in material existence. Therefore, human life is meant for subduing the modes of passion and ignorance and advancing in the mode of goodness. This is culture. One must subdue the modes of passion and ignorance. In the mode of passion, when one is falsely proud of wealth, one engages his wealth only for three things, namely wine, women, and gambling. We can actually see, especially in this age, that those who have unnecessary riches simply try to enjoy these three things. Right, because the demigods aren't into meat eating, but these other three. So you're going to enjoy yourself in there, because you can get much nicer cooking that's not non-vegetarian. Right? In Western civilization, these three things are very prominent because of an unnecessary increase of wealth. Narad Muni considered all this in the case of Manigriva and Nalakuvara, because he found in them so much pride in the wealth of their father, Kuvera. Srila Prabhupada writes in the Krishna book, when a man is infatuated with the false prestige of opulence, he does not care for any moral instruction, but indulges in wine, women, and animal killing. In such circumstances, a poverty-stricken man is often better situated, because a poor man thinks of himself in relation to other bodies. A poor man often does not wish to inflict injuries upon other bodies, because he can understand more readily that when he himself is injured, he feels pain. Therefore, the great sage Nara considered that because the demigods, Nalakuvara and Manigriva, were so infatuated by false prestige, they should be put into a condition of life devoid of opulence. Right? And our Arjuna trees, then you don't see that they have like special flowers or special anything else like that. They're medicinal. The bark is medicinal, you know, so they're famous for that. But otherwise, they're just, you know, not like a, you know, a mango tree or a champa tree or something that has even the prestige of I give good flowers, right? So, Narad Muni continued, unable to control their senses, rascals who are falsely proud of their riches or their birth in aristocratic families are so cruel that to maintain their perishable bodies, which they think will never grow old or die, they kill poor animals without mercy. Sometimes they kill animals merely to enjoy an excursion. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakura writes, although all people see before their eyes old age and death, they do not think the body is temporary. Right? So their body is temporary, but they're going about killing. They don't know they're going to die soon also. So instead of engaging themselves in these kinds of activities, they'd engage themselves in activities that are going to make them Krishna conscious. Right, solve the problem, but they don't. They just aggravate the problem. Srila Prabhupada adds, when the modes of passion and ignorance increase in human society, giving rise to unnecessary economic development, the result is that people become involved with wine, women, and gambling. Right, because it's called, what is it? There's a name for it. Expendable income? Is that the term? There's a term that means that the middle class has money that can be spent. Expendable income. You know? So that means it's not actually necessary. Right? Because if it was necessary, they'd be using it for things that are necessary, but they're using it for things that are not. It's not like they're using that money getting themselves a better facility or house or eating better food or nicer clothes. It's that they use it for things that are not necessary. Right? Does that make sense? That's the problem. Then, being mad, they maintain big slaughterhouses or occasionally go on pleasure excursions to kill animals, right? Because hunting is considered a pleasurable thing. Right? Forgetting that, however, one may try to maintain the body is subject to birth, death, old age, and disease. Such foolish rascals engage in sinful activities, one after another. Being Duskritis, they completely forget the existence of the Supreme Controller, who is sitting within the core of everyone's heart. Ishvaras sarvabhutanam prideshcher junatishtati. Bhagavad Gita 18:61. That Supreme Controller is observing every bit of one's activity, and he rewards or punishes everyone by giving one a suitable body made by material nature. Brahmayan sarvabhutani yantra purudhani mayaya. Bhagavad Gita 18:61. In this way, sinful persons automatically receive punishment in different types of bodies. The root cause of this punishment is that when one unnecessarily accumulates wealth, one becomes more and more degraded, not knowing that his wealth will be finished with his next birth. Because if you use the wealth properly, then you may go on and have that wealth. But if you don't use it, you only use it in an improper way, then the next life it will be gone. Because that's how you reduce that false ego, is just by not having it. You have false ego, then you take away, then they don't have the false ego. Mm-hmm. So it's just how the modes of nature. So the rich people are the poor people that had the proper attitude, and all the poor people are the rich people that had a bad attitude. Mm-hmm. That's how it works. Mm-hmm. Right? You know, you deal with them how they are now. You don't go, oh, well, he was a rich person. I'm not giving him anything. No, it's that they're in that condition. You deal with them because you're supposed to deal according to etiquette. But because they didn't deal according to etiquette, that's why they're in the position they're in. Mm-hmm. Right? So it's unfortunate. Just because someone's unfortunate means you don't take care. The kids are stupid. They go outside. They go play in the snow. They take off their coat, their gloves, everything like that that's put on so that they won't get sick. And they come back inside sick. So now do you say, wow, you made yourself sick. You take care of yourself. No, you take care. But eventually, slowly, slowly, they'll learn. Does that make sense? So that's how we deal. But it's not that by improper activity you don't get a reaction. Mm-hmm. Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Jai Srila Prabhupada ki, Jai Samaveta Bhaktivinoda ki, Jai Nitai Gaurakinda.